We know that dreams are sequences of images, ideas, emotions, and sensations done without will in the mind. Dreams appear as short stories during rapid eye movement, stage when brain activity is at its peak. Dreams that happening during a lower actively are not as clear as or memorable. And I believe that we do experience dream from time to time, don't we? Often the dream would still be powerfully present and sometimes more appealing than the dull or dreary reality we actually faced. But we had to tell ourselves that this wasn't the reality. Sometimes, of course, it's the other way around. Sometimes you are in the middle of a nightmare, which seems so real, so powerful, and so horrible that when you wake up, you can hardly dare to believe that it was only a dream, that the accident didn't happen, that so-and-so is still alive after all, that the monster attacking you was just in your imagination. Again, the clash of dream and reality is powerful. To begin with, it may be difficult to tell which is which. Well, John is facing a similar problem with the little communities to whom he's sending this book. This community, they are about to face a nightmare. Suffering is on the way, and they must be ready for it. And what he's offering them here is part of his continuing vision. And it's a vision not of nice dreams in his head, but of the heavenly reality, which is the absolute, complete truth against which the nightmare must be calculated. This, he says, is the ultimate reality of the situation, and you must hold on to it for dear life as you plunge back into the nightmare. The reality is that the Creator God and the Lamb have already won the victory. The victory, which means that those who follow the Lamb are rescued from dangers, from harm. The reality is that the people who claim the Lamb's protection may well have to come through a time of great suffering, but they will then find themselves in the true reality, in God's throne room, worshiping and serving Him day and night with great, abundant, and exuberant joy. At this point, John glimpses the further future, the vision of the new Jerusalem itself. And you know, that is why I think this part of the Bible should be called the glorious vision. And it is important to know that you and I, we are part of this vision. We belong in that vision. Jesus Christ is showing John in here a vision where we are included in. Therefore, today I'm inviting you to see about what is the vision is all about. When will this vision realized? What does it look like? And how does it relate with our lives as Christians and our church here in Otterfield? Last Sunday, I had a conversation with Pastor Mark and John about the fact that we need to have a vision about the future of our church. What would Otterfield Baptist Church be like in 10, 20, 30 years from now? So what can we learn from this vision, and how does it relate to us in that regard? Well, this is point number one. The vision of great multitude we see in verse 9 to 14. The vision in these verses is the thing which John sees after heard the list of the 144,000 in verses 4 and 8. We see this number in chapter 14 as well, verse 1 till 5. And formally speaking, this is the complete people of God, 12 times 1,000. From every nation, from all tribes and peoples and tongues. You see, all four words in different order are used in chapter 5, verse 9 of Revelation as well. For emphasis, the writer uses all of them to indicate the whole human race. So this text referred not exclusively to martyrs, but rather to the whole Christian community at the end of time. And you and I once again are included in that. And it says that they are clothed in white for victory and purity. This crowd is carrying palm branches as a further sign of victory celebration. And they cannot restrain their enthusiasm, their gladness. They are shouting out their delight and praise and thanks to God and to the Lamb, because they have won the victory which has brought them their rescue. You know, the word salvation in verse 10 means literally rescue. But often in the Old Testament, the word seems to mean the victory through which rescue is won. So it seems to be here. The shout of praise continues in verse 12, where the great crowd of the redeemed recognize with joy that everything good, everything noble, everything powerful and wise comes from God Himself. The reason their clothes are white is not because they necessarily lived lives of total holiness and purity. No. But because the blood of the Lamb, the sacrificial Passover-like death of Jesus Himself, has rescued them from slavery to sin, and making them able to at once to stand in the very presence of the living God. The death of Jesus and the suffering they've already endured have done all that is required. Do you remember the promise that God made to Abraham, that his seed would be as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand of the sea, from Genesis 15, Genesis 32, and that he would be the father of many nations, Genesis 17. You know, those promises are both fulfilled in this passage, where John observed a great multitude that no one could count. The followers of Christ the Lamb, the seed of Abraham, are the great multitude. That the great multitude is from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages. And the size of the multitude and the diversity of the group emphasize the universality of Christ's gospel. And, you know, we are once again included in it, you and I. So let's move to point number two. Look at verse 15 to 17 about the vision of New Jerusalem, the city of God. You see, at this point, John glimpses the further future, the vision of the New Jerusalem itself. We are not there yet. But as so often in Revelation and in Christian thinking generally, present and future overlap and interlock in various confusing ways, and already some of the blessings of the final city are to be experienced by these people, by us, those who are about to suffer in Ephesus or Smyrna or Pergamum or wherever they may be. God, he says, will protect them from the elements and from hunger and thirst. And in a wonderful role reversal, the lamb will turn into a shepherd, assuming the royal role of John 10 as the good shepherd, and the defined role of Psalms 23 about God as the shepherd who leads his people to spring of living water. And then at last, in a final anticipation and destination, the New Jerusalem, the city of God, will appear, and God himself will wipe away every tear from their eyes. You know, the same vision we see in Revelation 21, 1 till 4. Let's turn to Revelation 21, 1 till 4. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with men. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away." And back to Revelation 7, verse 15, speaking about the great multitude of people that John envisions, he says that God will not only allow and welcome them into his presence, he will shelter them with his presence. You know, the word for shelter them means literally that God will pitch his tent over them, as he pitched his tent in the midst of the Israelites during their wilderness wanderings. All the blessings of the Jerusalem temple, in other words, will be theirs. And the similar expression is also found in John 1:14. When John was writing about the first coming of Jesus, the Word became flesh and dwelt among them, or among us. So the New Jerusalem, the city of God, is where God will dwell and rule this great multitude of people forever. If you see in Genesis 17, 4 till 16, we see that God promised Abraham not only that he would be the father of many nations, but he would inherit the promised land. All promises to Abraham are completed at this time. That is why the vision of John is called the glorious vision. So now, how does this glorious vision relate to us? Well, I think number one, we should be grateful that we belong to the winning team, to God's team. Yes, at the moment and from time to time, we face sufferings. But with God, John says, we will overcome it. In the end, you know, you and I will be among those great multitude of people praising and worshiping the Lord in the eternal city of God. Number two, I think we need to keep working hard to do the missions that God has given us to do. And I believe more than ever that people around us need Jesus Christ, because in reality, He is the only hope for them. They need us to tell them about the hope that we have in Him. And I believe with all my heart that Otterfield Baptist Church is the beacon of hope of this community, the community around us. Why? Well, because we know the gospel. We have the gospel. We just need to bring it to the people around us. One of the classic songs that I love so much is called "People Need the Lord." I think Steve Green's version is the best. And you know, our community needs the Lord. The question is, how do they know the Lord if we do not tell them face to face? You know, at the Fellowship International, we've been asked to learn and to implement what we call the Discipleship Making Movement, DMM, globally, in many different parts of this earth. You know, Revelation 7, 9 till 17 is talking about the Discipleship Making Movement. He's talking about the great multitude of people. That is DMM. And one important thing that I've learned throughout the years is that a movement cannot be accomplished only by the leaders of the church, by Pastor Mark or the deacons. A movement can only be accomplished when everyone in the church does something, when everyone in the church involved in doing missions. So let's do it. Spring is here. Summer is coming. And COVID is disappearing, I think, eventually. And people will be outside, right? So let's meet them intentionally. And let's talk about Jesus and His saving works with them, because He is their only hope. God bless you.